You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Rayu and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
You're after something. Is it revenge? Money? Or is it something else?
You look good. A little rough around the edges, but good.
Heard about a job. Big shot gangster putting together crew.
I'm a driver, and I'm a flyer. I waited a long time for a shot like this.
What do you think?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I'm your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today is Andy Comer.
How's it going?
And today we are going to be talking about Solo, a Star Wars story in 3D, if you look on Box Office Mojo. there's another Star Wars movie out, and people semi got excited for it. And Andy, how's it doing?
Box office wise, very poorly.
God.
Basically, as a lot of people have probably heard, that is being just decimated in the box office because its opening weekend, opening 3 day, was $84 million, which obviously to you and me is a lot of money, but to a studio that needs to make over $400 million back, its opening weekend needs to be higher than that, especially since the word of mouth is lukewarm at best. There are a lot of people that enjoy the film and that are, you know, championing it, but there's a lot of people that are like, this is completely pointless. And I know a lot of people that are like, yeah, I never planned on seeing it in theater. So we'll see where you and I land on that spectrum in a bit. But yes, this movie is was originally projected over 160 to 175 million opening weekend, 3 weeks out, I think it was. They're like, oh yeah, it's going to be another hit. It was projected 175 million domestic, like 60 to 75 million domestic. Currently, we are how many days in? Just under a week, or is this today's a week?
It's about 6 days. But
yeah, here. 6 days. Worldwide, we are at 179.
Oh, God.
So, yes, it is not doing what they hoped. And I was like, honestly, I'm like, I'm not feeling the buzz on this at all, which obviously I've been wrong before, because like Wonder Woman didn't feel the buzz at all, but then the word of mouth obviously helped that a lot. But like this one was completely the same. Like, I'm like, this is not getting any buzz at all. I'm not seeing that much love. Like, people are like, yeah, I want to see it, but they're like, not like, oh, I need to see it like right away. So my projections were like when they were saying like 170, I'm like, I'm thinking like 120, 130. And then it came in almost half of that with 84 opening weekend. I'm like, Jesus, this movie is kind of screwed. And honestly, I think that it doesn't need to make a lot of money because it wasn't that great for me. So we can go into that if you want to now.
Well, and here's the reason why it matters so much that it costs, or I mean, it grossed back this last weekend, you know, including the Memorial Day weekend, $103 million. The reason why it's such a big deal is because this was the most expensive film yet, because of the reshoots, because of hiring a new director, the replacing Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. I mean, and not to get too, like, on that debate of if they should or shouldn't have fired Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, but this arguably this was, you know, at least a two. This was a big movie for them. This cost more than The Last Jedi.
Yeah, they said that with reshoots it got up to around 300. So yeah. And that's a lot of money for this kind of film, especially since you, like you just said, it was more than you know, an episodic one. So it's just really disappointing for them. Also, one thing like that might have helped, obviously, with all the behind the scenes issues that people heard about, that did not help, like with the people that like us that heard about all that stuff. But a lot of people didn't know about all that, so honestly, it might not have affected that many people. But you know, if you have issues like that, you want to make sure that you have the best story on screen. Why not push it back to Christmas, like everything else, so that there's like more time to build up anticipation rather than just the 5 months that we got from Last Jedi till now. Like, that doesn't make any sense for me, especially since they have another huge window for the next one, like an even bigger window than usual than for the next one. So it just didn't make sense to me. But like, and then on top of that, they, instead of waiting, they decided to put it behind Deadpool and Infinity War, which cross over like 80% of its, like I would say 80% of all three of those films, like moviegoers want to see all three films. So that's just stupid on like on a bunch of different levels to me, especially for a studio that usually does so well with this kind of stuff.
Yeah. And the thing is about Solo also that it had the disadvantage was even if they did move in December, they still had to compete with currently Aquaman and the other Spider-Man, the Spider-Man animated movie. And I mean, there was a lot more they were going to have to.
Yeah, but Infinity War is a bigger thing than all of them combined. Deadpool is bigger than most of them combined. It's like it decided to go against the Titans of the year rather than some big guys.
Right. And that's kind of where I fall with Solo, is that, you know, it's a miracle that that Ron Howard was able to put this film together in 10 months, you know, and still the movie, it's not like on Justice League's level. It's not on.
No, not at all.
It's nowhere near that big of a mess. So right there, it's a plus. But the issue with keeping it on that May release date was you were going to be subjugated to being in a maelstrom of other big blockbusters. Even in June, you're still going to have to compete with Incredibles 2 and Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, which both of those are still tracking to do well. Yep. So it was always going to be an uphill battle for Solo. And I understand why they want to like release a Star Wars movie in May. I mean, that's where traditionally Star Wars has been, you know, before, you know, the new films. But the thing is, A, we had just gotten through Last Jedi, and that was the most controversial of the series. I could still find new recent videos talking about Last Jedi, and we're now just getting Solo. So it's the Last Jedi hype has not really died down that much. And now, you know, it's following. And I know you and I both really liked Last Jedi, but people still have issues with what Lucasfilm did with The Last Jedi in general. So Solo had to follow up another level, like another uphill battle of just like, please just impress the Star Wars fans again. But again, it's kind of, I think it just had a lot on its plate and the plate collapsed.
Yeah. And I would like to also point out one thing. A lot of people are like leading up to it. Everyone was talking about, you know, like every year people are talking about like which films will hit $1 billion this year. A lot of people were saying, well, obviously Solo, because it's a Star Wars film. And I instantly disagreed. I'm like, I was thinking at the time it'd make like 800, 850 just because it's a Star Wars film. Our biggest argument was that it is the first movie that isn't directly in line with the Skywalker saga. And then everyone's like, well, what are you talking about? Rogue One made over $1 billion, and that isn't either, but it's directly tied into it. Its plot has to do with that plot. This one has a character that shows up later, but the plot has nothing to do with anything that's happened. It's literally just a background story, and it's not that important. Like, on paper, you're like, oh, you're just learning how he becomes, you know, this famous guy, probably how he gets the Falcon, stuff like that. You know, that's just details. Rogue One had plot that actively went into the plot of what we've already lived with our entire lives. So that one had a lot more ties to it, even though only Vader and a few other cameos popped in there. But honestly, I think that movie is significantly better as well. So that added to the box office success as well. But this one, there's no reason why I like, besides the fact that it has Star Wars in the title, doesn't automatically mean it's a $1 billion film. And like, and it shouldn't, because like, that's obviously a milestone. Less than 50 films in history have hit that. So not every film can. So yeah, it's a thing.
I mean, not even the DC universe has cracked $1 billion yet. So,
but that's their own fault.
Well, yeah, I agree, but
I'm not saying every one of theirs should have, but if Suicide Squad can pull off 750, there's no reason that Justice League doesn't hit 1.2.
Yeah, I'm just saying it is completely their fault. I'm just saying, you know, that's how huge the feat still is that yeah. Even those blockbusters that were highly anticipated, because we forget, like, each of the DC movies so far had some level of anticipation. Maybe yeah. Justice League died a little bit as we got towards it, but those movies, like, still were highly anticipated and still did not crack $1 billion. So,
yeah,
just putting that in perspective. But yeah, and that's really like all I have to say about the box office results is that it's just going to be a hard feat for them to even. I even argue it'll be a hard feat for them to reach 550 million.
Right now for Solo?
Yeah.
Oh no, it the way it's going right now, what did it get? It got 84 last week. This week's supposed to be it's going to be get like 40 less than. Maybe. So yeah, this movie, I would be shocked if it made 500. Honestly, I think it'll settle around like 375, 400.
Which, that is a bomb, because not only
That would be, like, I don't know how much they spent on marketing. So, like, marketing could be balloon it up to like 450. So it wouldn't be a bomb. It would just be like, we broke even / made less or barely lost anything. It's studio standard wise.
Well, the way it works, the way box office works is it's accumulating all the box office. If I remember my media finance class, it accumulates all the, you know, money that was made during that weekend. It's not directly split on, you know, it doesn't tell you what the split was for what the theater is going to get in the end as well.
Yeah, that's true as well.
So it's going to have to at least make 600 to break even, and that's being generous.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, it's gonna. Yeah, this was a bomb, and it sucks because I think there's interesting things in Solo that could be built upon later, especially if you get a good director, especially if you get a good filmmaker, and these things could, and even better, you could. Combine, and even better, you could pull yourself out of out of the ditch like X-Men First Class did, and combine, you know, Solo stories or spinoff stories and make an even really good movie if you have a really good filmmaker. But again, we're just gonna have to see how Lucasfilm and Disney play their chips now that a May release Star Wars movie didn't work, and also you just can't release something with the Star Wars name attached and it be a $1 billion success or even a $750 million success. So it'll be interesting to see what will come of it. As of this recording, we're recording the Thursday after it came out. So we'll see if any news comes out in the next couple of weeks, but yeah, fairly interesting. It'll be fairly interesting to see what happens with that Boba Fett movie that got announced last week and the Obi-Wan movie that's coming out also in 2020, I think. Yeah. It'll be interesting. So with that said, Gene, do you have any more thoughts on the box office and everything outside of Solo in general?
Box office related, I hate the argument, oh, like, just give me that much money and blah, 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 and I'll be happy. Like, studios are not people. They employ millions of people around the world throughout the course of the year. And, you know, they need each film to make money so that they can put that money into the next series of films. Also, it affects the series itself because, like, look at X-Men Origins. That was so bad that their whole onslaught of X-Men Origins series was completely taken apart, minus the Magneto stuff that they ended up using in First Class. Like, they were going to do X-Men Origins Magneto, X-Men Origins Xavier, X-Men Origins blah, blah, blah. And then they morphed it because of how bad Wolverine was. This does affect things. And, like, even though it's a huge company like Disney and everything like that, they do have very few failures like this. But it will change how they do certain things, and they're going to definitely be more cautious in certain areas. So this will affect them. There's no doubt about that at all.
Yeah, I agree. I think we'll see a game plan change, and I think some of the announced series or announced trilogies of films that we've been hearing about, like from, you know, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, or I think Jon Favreau's show is pretty much safe because it's going to be on the live action. I think it's going to be on the Disney streaming service, I think. And I think a couple other things will kind of get reshuffled. And I really do think that what we get out of, I think what might have been, what might be their ideas for the Solo sequel will probably get morphed into the Obi-Wan movie. Like, they'll probably combine certain elements. I don't want to spoil it right now, but they're going to combine certain elements from that were presented in Solo, and they'll just put it and conclude it in the Obi-Wan movie, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And then maybe they'll do Boba Fett, but do it like as $100-$125 million movie.
All that should be anyway.
Yeah, it should be, but for whatever reason, both Rogue One and Han Solo have had like the most troubled production so far in like this decade.
It's because it's something new. It isn't the episodes. And it's something new, so they're very weary about the direction of the directors that they selected, and then they had to go through massive reshoots because it didn't turn out the way that they envisioned it, and then they had to fix things. So it's got to be frustrating, but like, they need to have more faith in their directors, kind of like what Marvel is doing with their directors that they choose, like giving James Gunn as much freedom as he has. Find a director that's as capable as Gunn and give him the keys and be like, okay, well, here's the leash. It's really loose, but like, we trust you, and then see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. Like, you know, and I didn't want to get into this conversation, but with Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, you spent 2 years with these guys before you fired them.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
How did you get that far and not know that this was not going to work out?
Honestly, at that point, I want to see what they would have done because, yeah, they said that like Ron Howard reshot 70% of the film. Like, I want to know what their like film was looking like that you're just like, okay, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it probably will never happen because I mean, I'm still wondering what Gareth Edwards' rough cut was that scared everybody shitless.
Yeah.
Because even looking at the movie, I'm like, Edwards' style is not that bad. And Edwards is not that bad of a filmmaker. He sucks at character development, but still, Godzilla and Monsters and some of the things he was talking about before the reshoots and whatnot about Rogue One, like, they're pretty competent and very interesting ideas. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I'm bummed about, how they've handled everything so far, Lucasfilm, but to be fair, their content is still great. I mean, Last Jedi is still one of the best Star Wars movies, and Force Awakens accomplished the goal that was set out and in a very good way.
Yeah, that is a good movie. It's not like great, but it's definitely a good movie, and it's better than it could have been. It's better than all the prequels, and it's better. It just did everything it needed to get people excited for Star Wars again.
And then, for what it's worth, Rogue One still is a harrowing picture. Like, it's still a good movie.
Yeah, I love Rogue One. I've watched it many times. I know that I don't really talk about Rotten Tomatoes very much because most people don't know how to use it. But for those that do, take this as you will. Rogue One has 85% on Rotten Tomatoes. Solo has 71. So, like, that's probably, besides the prequels, the lowest of all the Star Wars films. So that's another thing that isn't driving, that's not going to drive Solo to become, like, what happened with Jumanji almost hitting $1 billion. Like, because that movie opened with like 36 million opening weekend, and then it somehow crawled its way to 960 million. So, like, that's not going to be what's happening here with Solo. Solo has way more competition, way less word of mouth, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah. And the other thing about Jumanji, and also throw in The Greatest Showman as well, is that people kept going back to it. People kept going back to those movies to rewatch them. Rather, if it was The Greatest Showman for the musical numbers, or Jumanji, because it's a really funny film. It's a really entertaining movie. And I think that's, and I just don't see Solo having that legs because, other than a few set pieces, it's not really worth going back to. It's not really that fun to go back to Solo.
Exactly.
Do you want to get into why it's not that fun?
Yes.
Go ahead.
So a lot of people that I've talked to, they've said that they love it because they love the characters and they love, like, the action pieces, and they are fine with the story and all this stuff, and they want to know more about Han. Setting up my going into this movie, just so that we're clear on all this stuff, I was weary just because I'm like, ever since that they started talking about like the spinoff series, I was perfectly fine with Rogue One. I'm like, yes, that sounds like I want a war movie in the Star Wars universe where it's not like force dependent. The only force users in that film are Vader. Vader's the only force user in the entire film. So it's not like force based. It's not like, your typical Star Wars where like it's all about like, Jedi and everything like that. It's an actual war movie in the Star Wars universe. And that's what I was really excited about. For this, I was not excited about anything. I knew that he had won the Millennium Falcon from Lando. I'm like, yeah, we're going to see him meet Chewie. We're going to see him get the Millennium Falcon. Please don't show us the Kessel Run. I found out right beforehand that they do. My problem with that was that no matter what whatever they build up in your, what you have built up in your head will be significantly better than anything that they can put on screen. Because ever since I was a kid, I've heard about the Millennium Falcon doing the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs. I don't give a crap about like that a parsec is a distance, not a time. I don't care about that stuff. The fact is that in my head, it's something that is damn near impossible, and that only the greatest pilot in the universe could do. That's why Han did it and was able to do it with the Millennium Falcon. They never really explained what it was. Was it a heist? Was it a race? We don't know. They decided to show it. And honestly, for me, it's completely ruined. It means absolutely nothing to me anymore. And that kind of ruins that character and, like, honestly, my favorite ship in the universe. So that's kind of annoying. But then also going through, it seemed like it had no faith in story or like what they were doing, because almost every scene, Han or Chewie or Lando did or did something or said something similar or exactly the same way that they did in previous times that we've seen them. And it was jarring to the point where like, or it was so obvious that it was just like fan service or like a little wink to us saying like, hey, these are those characters, wink, wink, that it took me out of the film so much or like so often that like the pacing of the film was jarring to me. And I just did not, I'm like, is this, it felt like 3 hours to me, honestly. And it just was not fun because I'm just like, okay, we get it. We understand that this is Han, Chewie, and Lando. Like, I'm perfectly fine with their portrayals. Like, I like the guys and what they did with it, but I just don't like what they were given. And it was honestly very, very lazy to me.
With that said, I like the actors playing the characters, but the story, the way it's executed and the way the film functions in this universe, or even on its own, it's just, to me, I was, until like the last 20, 30 minutes, and we'll get to that in the spoiler section, but until like the last 20, 30 minutes of this movie, I was just bored. I was bored out of my mind because I didn't really care about anything. I really, you know, Han Solo is not really the Han Solo we know yet, but that's fine because we're supposed to build to that, hopefully. So Han Solo is not quite the character we know. Because he kind of is a screw up, but it's not really like interesting how he screws up. Like really everyone kind of get like, not to go back to Force Awakens, but everyone kind of, no one really likes the scene where where Han and Chewie have like those monsters, those tentacle monster things. I can't remember what those are called. Everyone hates that scene because it feels pointless. But the reason why that scene works so well is because it feels like that's something Han Solo would do. It feels so in nature of Han Solo to be transporting these monsters and to screw up another deal and then, you know, somehow get lucky to get out of that situation. Like it feel like that's in totally, you know, Han Solo. This one, I didn't feel that at all. I didn't feel any of those situations at all to where Han was quite that lucky. I didn't feel, and none of it felt really that compelling. None of it felt compelling at all. And that's where I kind of stop loving Solo, is because if I'm not really compelled by anything, and also this movie, if I'm not compelled by anything, then, you know, then why should I care? And also this movie has prequel-itis like super bad. Like this movie is trying so hard to connect the dots of everything we know about Han Solo. And while in Rogue One, like, yes, that movie does have prequel-itis, but it fits in the timeline to have that all connect together, because literally where Rogue One ends is where A New Hope starts. So for me, I felt like the prequel-itis stuff of them like trying to connect to everything, connect reasons why, you know, Solo would go to Tatooine and all this stuff, you know, all everything, you know, and so it just was like, here, we're going to show you how he got to here. And for me, I'm like, that's not interesting. I want to see newer stuff with this character of Solo. I want to see a story with Solo that expands the mythology, not tell us exactly how or why he got there. And that's kind of where I feel with Solo, is that it's a borderline fine film to watch. It's not offensive, but in terms of what I'm looking for in these Solo movies, I'm looking for spin-off stories. What I'm looking for in these spin-off stories, I'm looking for spin-off stories that expand the mythology, expand the story further, and show us new places. But also, but it's not beholden to what we've seen before.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
It does.
So with that, do we have anything more to say about non-spoilery stuff before we get into spoilers?
I did like the villain.
Oh, yes, I did too.
What's her
Cora?
Yeah, Cora. I still have yet to find a movie where I like her anywhere even half as much as I like her as Daenerys.
Yeah, Emilia Clarke, she's had a rough, she must have terrible agents.
I don't know what's going on, but like I love her in Game of Thrones, but everything else, like, I just don't care for her at all.
This was the only other time I actually really liked her in anything, because I thought she was miscast as Sarah Connor because she just did not embody the strength that Sarah needed. Sarah Connor needs.
That movie's just terrible in the.
I'm going into too specific on that, but yeah, that's the. But for Emilia Clarke here, I thought she played the love interest slash. You know, I have, you know, agency here too. Especially, I have my own purpose here, and I thought she played her role very well. But yeah, it's still. But her character doesn't really get much. Doesn't really get that interesting until the end.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So yeah. Oh, I also like the robot. L3 is funny.
Yeah, L3 is good. I thought it was until I saw the credits. I thought it was Gwendolyn Christie. Honestly, I'm like, that's weird. But yeah, it's not.
It's Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and then yeah. I really liked all the stuff with is it Deckard, Woody Harrelson's character. I really liked all that stuff before. I really liked all that stuff before the train scene. I liked seeing Thandie Newton in there. I really was like really into Jon Favreau's character.
The problem I had with those two though were, are we going to start spoilers?
Yes, go.
Okay. So starting spoiler. During the train scene, we barely get to know those two new characters. You know, I'm like, oh, sweet. We're going to get like a good number of characters that we're going to get to know, blah, 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 stuff. Nope. They all died. They all died in the middle of the first heist that they fail. And I'm like, come on. Like, we could use some more characters that, like, otherwise it's going to be a host of all these guys that we know, because we know Lando, Chewie, and Han, and the Falcon. Like, besides that, who, like, we only had Kira in there. And that was about it by the end. So like, it's literally the same people that we've seen later films, but like, it's just lazy to me. Like, why not try to get new characters developed, you know, try to get them in there to get, you know, some new experiences happening.
Yeah. And just because they survived the movie, that doesn't mean that they are would not be ever
friends the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah. Or they would ever like run into these characters again.
It's a huge universe. Movies. It's yeah. A huge galaxy.
Yeah. This isn't like they're going to bump into each other, you know, at the battle. I think they're afraid that if they keep a character alive, that they're going to somehow speculate that, oh, they must be keeping that character alive because they're in episode 9or in the Boba Fett movie, or they're going to shoot. And I'm like, and I'm sure, yeah, they might use these characters again if people like them. But that doesn't mean we should kill them off just so we don't go, okay, well, they're not going to be in any other movies. Well, bye.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's getting lazy. In Rogue One, it was fine because it's a story of sacrifice. It's a story of sacrificing to a better cause, to a bigger cause. But still, it's a war movie. But Solo is a Western heist movie set in space. Not everybody has to die.
Yep.
And that's going to be the one time you ever hear me say, not everybody has to die in a movie. But going into spoilers, you know, yeah, those characters, they die too quickly. Thandie Newton and Jon Favreau, they die way too quickly. And on top of that, you know, it's very established very early on that Woody Harrelson's character and Thandie Newton's character, they have a romance, and he kind of just sulks on a hill for like 30 seconds. And then they're like, oh, Well, I gotta go get another job. Let's go talk to Devin Ross. Let's talk to Paul Bettany.
Yeah.
Who looks like he's been clawed by a bear.
Yeah. And that, okay. So, you know, them explaining all this stuff, like over explaining like these characters, like, you know, like giving Han his name. That was annoying to me. That kind of treatment of these characters make me kind of dread the Boba Fett movie, because like you're going to get all of the details like of why he chose all the armor he did. How did he get the dent in the top of his mask? Like, how did all this stuff happen? Like, we don't need to know every defining detail of every one of these characters. You know, you can just build the character naturally.
You know, the appeal to some of these characters, Andy, is that they're a mystery.
Yeah.
They are mysterious. We don't know that much about them. We learn about them through the three films.
Exactly.
So we don't need to know everything. Also, it doesn't make that scene doesn't make any fucking sense, because later on he talks about his father knowing his dad. I'm like, so you remember your dad, but you don't remember your last name.
He should have just been born Han Solo. It makes no sense not to, or to add that. It's dumb.
It is.
Yeah, it's stupid. But him meeting Chewie was fine. The only problem with that is it kind of made me question when this took place, because Chewie was in episode 3. So obviously this happens after Revenge of the Sith.
Right. I mean, well, it's enough time to where the Empire can build its stock. It can build its...
Yeah. And then I verified with Patrick about the big spoiler at the end. So at the end of the film, it turns out that Kira is, after that pretty sweet fight, actually. Like, that's one thing I liked about the villain, is that he had unique weapons. And then Kira ended up taking him out and everything. And she ends up turning on this hologram, and it turns out that she's actually working for Darth Maul. So obviously, as many of you probably know, Darth Maul was in like Clone Wars and Rebels and stuff like that, after his on-screen death in Phantom Menace, quote-unquote on-screen death, where he just fell, you know, and cut in half. But so obviously I knew that he died sometime, but I just didn't remember when. And that's why I was like trying to figure out when this timeline was. And that kind of messed with me with the Chewbacca thing and then him being there. That's what, like, it kind of narrowed it down a bit, though.
So, yeah, and that's why I find Korra the most interesting in that last, like, bit, because, like, oh, she's working with this character and she's willing to double cross the person that she has known her life or known for a long period of time, and even have feelings for him still, in order to have her own agency, in order to complete her own independence and go forward, because she is killed. She has murdered Devin Ross, or whatever Paul Bettany's character is, to get even higher in the anarchy. She is used in a brilliant strategic way, her ex-lover Han, to get even higher in this hierarchy that we don't know that much about. And it's even more interesting now because of her decisions to keep going forward. Cause she could have easily been like, let's grab these, you know, rubies and jewels, buy our ship, get out of here, and then live the rest of our lives. But no, she's made a compelling decision that makes her interesting to stay with Crimson Dawn. And that's why for me, I'm like, I want to see Korra in this universe still, because because I want to know what led to that decision. And I want to know how that decision builds her as a character going forward.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, that's, and also, you know, that's kind of cool that Darth Maul is in it. And it kind of confirms even further that there's going to be a possibility that Darth Maul and Obi-Wan will be in the same room again. Well, they will meet again in this universe. Cause really, I mean, is it clear that the Clone Wars and Rebels are part of the universe? Is it clear?
Yep. Everything that's continuing is canon.
So. Okay. So
once Disney once Disney bought it, everything that came out after was canon.
Okay. So, yeah, they could literally make a Obi-Wan movie where Obi-Wan goes on an adventure and fights and encounters Obi-Wan again. And then that way we can kind of meld the two together. If Disney wanted to, they can meld their ideas for Solo 2 and Obi-Wan together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what makes me more excited about Obi-Wan is that possibility, more than a Solo 2 or a even with James Mangold involved. I'm still like, do we really need a Boba Fett movie? Can we just make a Boba Fett movie that's a comedy where we just make fun of Boba Fett the whole time?
Honestly, I'm fine with the Boba Fett movie. I just wish that it would go along the vein of, like, you know, just like a bounty hunters type thing and like have nothing else connected to the universe besides obviously the Empire being there, but like have no familiar characters, just him, you know, dealing with other stuff, you know, taking out like a huge target that we don't know anything about. It doesn't have to be connected to anything. Just show like him being badass because all these people are talking about how stupid he looks in Return of the Jedi.
I mean, look, James Mangold is a really good director, and he's worked with Simon Kinberg before on the X-Men movie. So it could be interesting. It could be an interesting movie, but I'm really more interested in what they do with Obi-Wan, and really much more interested in how Abrams wraps up the trilogy, the new trilogy, more than anything going on in the Star, more than any idea I've heard from the Star Wars universe so far.
So
in terms of other things, I really did like L3. I liked the scene with Korra and L3 about how I thought the funniest moment was them talking about her relationship with Lando. That really was the only scene where like I got a good laugh out of it, because it really is like, it's a funny, sincere, like, you know, and out of, you know, it kind of goes out of place. So it's an out of place moment in this whole movie that just works so well.
Yeah. Speaking of her, I'll go into why the Kessel Run is ruined for me.
Go ahead. I had my thoughts.
It's supposed to be something like, we don't know if it was a race or it turns out that it's the end of the heist. He has this product that's, finished like fuel type stuff. And if it's unrefined too long, then it will implode, you know, obviously killing everybody on the Falcon. So they have to take the shortcut from, the planet, you know, to get back to the planet where they can get it refined. So they take a shortcut through this uncharted part of space. As they're leaving, you know, L3 gets shot and dies like shortly into the run. And earlier, Lando said that he keeps her around because she has the best navigation in the entire galaxy. So as they get into trouble, because Han is doing fine, like he has some people chasing him and he's doing fine. He's doing his thing. You know, he's being one of the best pilots in the universe, whatever you want to say. And he's doing fine. But then they decide to take it out of his hands by putting L3's navigations into the computer so that the Millennium Falcon can do all of the work for Han. And then on top of that, when they're like, obviously they have to like have a cliffhanger part of it, where this whole thing shouldn't be that difficult, because obviously they made, like, if they wouldn't have ran into that like giant squid thing, they would have been through it no problem at all. The only reason that they had issue is because the thing slowed them down enough that they got caught in the star imploding or whatever it was when that thing got dragged in. And then when they're like full boosters, they're just locked in a dead like standstill where they can't get out. But this thing is closing, so that we know that there's a time limit for them to get out of this situation. So then they take the raw fuel, stick it into the boosters. And then, of course, movie cliche, it stalls the engines before it launches them through. So it was all build up for nothing. And honestly, Han did so little to do to put him through, get him through the whole thing. It just really took all the magic away from it, because it was all the nav computer and then the extra boost in power because of the cargo that they had. If they had different cargo, they would have failed.
You're not wrong. That's the
So it literally takes all of the magic away from the Kessel Run for me.
It takes away the mysticism of it. And because you're like, holy shit, he fucking, because when you hear 12 parsecs and when you look at people talking about it or him talking about it, they're like, holy shit, he did what? It's like, but yeah, it kind of takes away the mysticism of it because of the whole thing in the legend of it, because L3 did a lot, because you're right, L3 did a lot of the navigational work, and then Han basically just, you know, thrusted everything. He just pulled the thrusters.
Yeah, Lando could have easily done it. Chewie could have easily done it. Like, anybody could have done it. Like, the only reason that Han was, like, impressive at the beginning is because they were being chased and he got rid of them.
Yeah. And that's just... that's kind of another action scene I just don't care about, because everything just went out just okay. They ran into a big squid and they pushed the big squid into the giant fire circle, and then they got out.
Basically.
I hate to say this, the last 30 minutes where Han comes up with this convoluted plan to screw Devin Ross, or to overthrow Devin Ross.
They just screwed each other over back and forth five different times. There's no one that he plans that far ahead.
Yeah. And I it's still interesting though, because it's like, cause the character has learned from Deckard, the character has learned something through this journey of like, hey, you know, don't, you know, try and predict everyone's moves and that's how you'll win. And he does. He absolutely, you know, screws everybody over. He does. He ends up screwing everyone over, except Cora, who screws everybody else over. So it is. It's a giant, just everyone just screwing each other. But still, it's way more interesting than anything else that happened in the movie.
Yeah. And then at the end, obviously, they have to hint at the, I would say, on par with the Kessel Run, like the whole thing with Han, you know, shooting first. They couldn't let that go because, you know, like the controversy of who shot first, Han or Greedo.
George Lucas for making something that wasn't controversial.
And then because it became controversial, then they put it into his canon for Solo because he's facing Deckard and then he knows Deckard's about to draw on him. And before he can draw, he shoots him. So, yes, Han shoots first in Solo. It's so lazy. There's no original ideas here.
How do you fucking spend 3 years making a fucking movie and it feels like the most generic movie imaginable?
Exactly. Especially since it's Star Wars and one of the most famous characters of all time in Han Solo.
How?
But final thoughts. The kid that played him, what's his name?
Alden Ehrenreich.
He did a good job. And Donald Glover did a really good job as Lando. What they were given was just garbage.
It's just, yeah. And that's the thing, too, is that and this will be kind of my final thoughts, too, is I really like the actors playing the roles. They did a fine job. I really liked everything about it. And I really liked everything about their performances. The issue was that there was nothing really compelling when you sit down and think about it. It all feels like it was rushed and rehashed and just like, well, let's just figure out how to connect dots. And as you and I both know, as we have sat through the Star Wars prequel trilogy, the Hobbit trilogy, and now this, connecting the dots is not really that compelling. And I would even argue the least compelling part of X-Men First Class is that Xavier gets shot in the back just so they can have him in the wheelchair for multiple movies. And that's for me the least compelling part of the movie, is they ended on Xavier getting shot in the back. And that's really the issue with the script, is it just doesn't work. It doesn't quite work on that level. And there's some interesting ideas in there. Like, there's this idea of everyone is trying to do one job just so they can get out of something they got screwed over with. Anyway, but it all ends up being a cycle that everyone has to keep going for. And I like that idea of this, you know, circular rotation of them doing a job, getting nearly killed or getting killed, and then just never quite getting out of a problem. They never quite get out. I like that idea. And I think that could actually have worked and could have been compelling, could have been even funny, maybe even more very dramatic. But in the end, at the end of the day with Solo, A Star Wars Story, I just didn't find it compelling. And There I Do by Tony Stark,
yep. I got nothing else.
Me neither. So, do you want to go into plugins?
Yep. You can find me on Twitter at The Talking Can. You can see my daily tirades there and comment at your leisure.
You can find me at Movie Kale on Twitter, and you can also follow the show at The Youth Critic for all updates and stuff going on. And then you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast. And we are starting retrospectives up again. The first episode will be Hot Shots Part 2, and that will be out this Sunday. Thanks, everyone. We will be back with you next week for something. I hear upgrades good, so maybe.
I heard a story we'll about you. That. I was wondering if it's true.
Yeah. Everything you've heard about me is true.
L3!
Let go of the mean man's face.
Who are these guys?
If you come with us, you're in this life for good.
You might want to buckle up, baby.
Some advice. Assume everyone will betray you, and you will never be disappointed.
I got a really good feeling about this.
Since when do you know how to fly?
190 years old? You look great.